It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
It's hard to break through some of the other big issues to make sure people understand their daily connection to what is grown in our fields and in our orchards and in our pastures and how it travels to get to them, and to understand how to make sure that every Californian has access to the really bountiful, nutritious abundance that we have to offer. So yes, we can always do better. And I think the exciting thing that I've seen in my 9 years, going on 10 years now, are these new coalitions of people, whether it's farmers and environmentalists, farmers and food justice people, people really recognizing this system as a foundation of the lifestyle that we enjoy.
Karen Ross is the Secretary of the California Department of Food and Agriculture. And these comments were a conversation she was having with one of our favorite podcasters, Michael Dimmick of Flipping the Table podcast. Watch for the full conversation with Secretary Ross on the Flipping the Table podcast. From California and back to Ohio, we witness new synergies and links between those who want to know how their food is produced and how to encourage stewardship of the land from their kitchens. It's not unusual for me to be on a farm, but it's unusual to be on a farm outside of Cincinnati and a farm that has a chef. That's unusual. And this particular chef is working to connect the land with the kitchen. And I think that's a really interesting idea. I want to welcome Stephanie White. Stephanie is the chef and culinary manager for Turner Farms. Stephanie, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Stephanie, this is fairly unusual. Mm-hmm. Explain what you do as a chef for a farm.
Okay, happily. Yeah, so it is bizarre because I think most people assume that if there's a chef on a farm, it's for a restaurant. And we have a teaching kitchen. So it's still a functional commercial kitchen. However, we focus on teaching both the public and for private events different techniques and using seasonal local ingredients.
So at one point, it was first a farm, and then somebody decided that people don't know how to use these products appropriately to get the most out of what you're producing. Is that right?
Right. For the most part, we've been an organic farm since 94, and about 4 years ago, our executive director decided that we needed a kitchen because there were a lot of products that we were growing and selling, and there was a gap in that being translated to being used on the plate or nutritionally being used and maximizing that. So they decided to build or outfit an old barn as a teaching kitchen.
Now, let's do a little bit of a background here, mm-hmm. though. Turner Farms, do I understand this correctly, that it had its origins in California?
Yeah, so Bonnie Matsui, our foundress, spent some time in California, and she's originally from Cincinnati. So she moved back here when this property came available because she's originally from like the property right next door. So she bought it and decided to essentially bootstrap her way into organic farming.
And so she came out here, she started having organic farming, you're producing products, and are those marketed in the Cincinnati area, the products that you produce?
Yeah, so we grow not just for our Indian Hill community, which is where the farm is located. We also go to Findlay Market, which is downtown. We sometimes sell at Madeira Market, which is basically the town over. And then we also have community gardens that are dispersed throughout Cincinnati. So we do grow for more than just our proper location.
Now, you were from the East Coast, and you went to the Culinary Institute of America, which a lot of chefs have graduated there. It's had a wonderful reputation. And so someday you just got a call out of the blue and say, come look at Cincinnati?
Yeah, quintessentially, I got an email. It's a long meandering story beyond that that happened really multiple years prior. But yeah, I was on the East Coast, originally grew up in Connecticut, and I have a love for farming. I actually spent 6 months on an organic farm in Maine in high school. So it's been a part of who I am as a person for a very long time. And I was actually working as an assistant food service director for an all-boys school in Morristown, New Jersey prior to this job. So I ended up here kind of not necessarily on a whim, but because of a pilot study that I was a part of while I was a student at the Culinary Institute of America.
So you're at this farm, and it's right on the edge of Cincinnati in Indian Hills, beautiful country, rolling hills and woods, and you're in this great old barn. So you come in, and so what do you do? What's first? I mean, it's like, okay, you're a chef. Here's the barn. Here's the farm. How do you start a program?
Right. It was, and it still is, interesting every single day. I came in, there had been no chef prior to me being in the space. So there was a blank open space except for the kitchen being built itself. So actually the first week I was here, they had already booked a catering event, which was super fun, not having a staff and not having a distributor beyond the food for the farm. We made it work, or I made it work. It was all good. But yeah, we first started off by deciding, you know, what was going to be in season and trying to work with the farm with what they were growing and how we could incorporate it into classes. And then I really looked at culinary techniques and trying to figure out what would be most useful for people that didn't want to become professional chefs, but might have interest in bettering their lives through understanding cooking techniques.
So you figure out what that is, and still you have to start with what you grow, I guess, right? So, and you have seasons.
Correct.
So I suppose you've got one thing to do when it's fresh, but then do you also have preserved and canned and,
yeah,
that sort of thing, and frozen?
Yeah, the only thing we don't typically do in our kitchen is canning, because we don't have a canning variance, which with food safety, it's a big deal. But we do a lot of fermentation in the kitchen, and I try to maximize what we have when we have it, and talk to people about food waste.
So what do you have? What are the products, the crops that you're growing?
So the crops that we're growing currently, it's pretty chilly in Cincinnati right now, but we do have a lot of greens. We've got some lovely baby greens. We also have mixed greens that are in little tunnels, essentially. So we also have shiitake mushrooms, lots of root veggies right now, tons of winter squash. So there's an abundance still. It's just a different way for people to think about the food rather than assuming that we'll have strawberries in December, because
yeah,
that's
well, I'm looking out the window and I still see snow on the ground.
Absolutely.
Here at this old barn, and so you said you have hoops, so you have the greens and the hoops too?
Yeah, greens and the hoops, and then we also have some greenhouses, like we have a tiny little greenhouse attached to the teaching kitchen where we grow some microgreens, and we'll actually even have a class on microgreens in the new year in February.
So who comes? So when you're putting a class together, you advertise that and get people to register and sign up and enroll for coming out here and taking a class?
So it's community members. We post on pretty much every social media outlet there absolutely is, and then our website as well, which is turnerfarm.org. And we put it on Facebook as events. And essentially, it started as the immediate local community, both Indian Hill and Terrace Park, and then it expanded from there. But we market to pretty much anybody who has any cooking knack or lust, but we also have preteen and teen classes, so we try to help get families into the kitchen as well.
So what is it? Do they come out like once a week for a period of time, or is it just an afternoon for some of these programs?
Most of our classes currently are about two-hour segments, because we know people have lives outside of classes. So we usually do a lot of evening ones, either from 6:30 to 8:30, or if it's a teen class, we'll make it 4:30 to 6:30. So they're small segments. We do some series where people come here multiple times or sign up for that whole segment. Otherwise, people can come and go as they please.
Well, give me an idea of this. So if I sign up and I'm coming to one of your classes, what might be a representative product and the steps we walk through at the class?
Right. So it totally depends on the theme of the class. Like this past Tuesday, we had a date night Thai cooking class, which was really fun. Typically, we always start the class with a little introduction of what we're going to go through. I have everybody wash their hands. My team sets up the kitchen prior to people coming here so they're not fuddling around trying to find equipment. But we walk through a few recipes. I usually demo something that might take more time, but I want to walk everybody through those steps. Once we create some food, we sit down to enjoy it together. Typically at that point, I let people be and eat rather than talking more and more, and we clean up the kitchen, or at least my staff does, so nobody has to actually do that besides the crew here. So, and then you go.
Now, these people then, when they when they get this experience, when is your feeling that they end up buying more like local organic, or are they still going to the supermarket and picking these things out and producing it from what they're buying it, buy more fresh produce or more to buy, you know, things by scratch?
Yeah, I think truly depends on the person themselves, but for the most part, we do get a lot more people coming to our market that's on site, but I think also purchasing locally. We have a great company called Local Food Connection in the area that's doing an awesome job of essentially becoming a local food hub and connecting people to local farms. So I've noticed a lot of people have piqued their interest because of these classes and are seeking out new and interesting ways to get local product. But it's not everybody, obviously. So
now, do you have meat and produce?
We do, yeah.
So what meats do you do?
So we have chicken on site. We also do eggs. We have lamb, beef, pork, and I believe that's it.
But you do cheese?
We don't do cheese. We don't have that license. But sometimes we'll make ricotta in classes, but I have to use somebody else's local milk.
So you're raising lamb, beef, pork here. Where are they slaughtered? Where's the processing for those products?
So lamb, beef, and pork, they all go to a USDA facility. We have been shifting where we bring them, so I'd actually have to double check.
But is it close by, or do you have to leave the state?
I don't believe we have to leave Ohio. Before we've gone to Kentucky, but it's pretty close, which people routinely forget that Kentucky's so close to Ohio.
See, as it's been said before, you can see Kentucky from here.
Oh, yeah. I live in Kentucky, so I'm a Kentuckian, which is even funnier.
Just over the river. Just over the river.
Yeah.
Now, it's really interesting because I think that around the country, there are organic farms, there are small farms, there are people that are doing direct, but that they probably all are bumping up against that of consumers are out of the habit of working with products. And so you're really filling a need. Mm-hmm. Any surprises that you've had as you've started doing these classes of something you didn't see coming? They come and they attend the session and you're like, I didn't think that it would be working that way.
Yeah, I've had many surprises over the past 2.5 years since being here. Some of them have been very simple as far as I didn't realize that many people didn't know how to properly hold a knife, which is always kind of interesting that is something that I would consider so rudimentary, but it is something that's so scary for so many people. So I try to help disarm people and realize that it's a process, and we're learning every step of the way, and I'm still learning about food every single day too. So nobody should feel embarrassed or like they don't know enough to cook. So that's been a really fun and surprising thing to learn. It's also been interesting looking at what people assume that they have to get rid of. So usually we try to leave like the skins on carrots and things like that because there's tons of nutrient density within the skin, and people are terrified sometimes. And we're like, I promise it's delicious. And usually we win people over very easily with that. But it's been very surprising seeing how much people actually waste their food just from either peeling or not realizing that they could saute their beet greens. So that's been a surprising but also enlightening experience for myself and I think for our students to learn that you can use a lot more than what you thought you might have.
Are you able to give any feedback to your farmers that are actually producing these products? Like, for example, these kind of carrots, so we need more of them, or, consumers are asking us for this kind of product or that kind of product. And are they able to make adjustments into what they're planning, either the varieties or the breeds of livestock or anything like that?
Yeah, we are a very small team here, to be honest, between management on Turner Farm. And we've had a lot of ability to work together to figure out what we might need more of in the next year, especially since prior to me being here, they didn't necessarily have to supply a teaching kitchen. So we've been learning as we go, but it's been a great opportunity to figure out, you know, people really love these greens, or Abby, our manager for the gardens, really loves Haruki turnips, so we started incorporating them into classes so that people started using them more. So we've been able to feed it both from the consumer needs but also from the farmer desires. So it's been super interesting.
Well, you're in a very prosperous neighborhood, this part of Cincinnati, and there are areas in this metro area of nearly 2 million people when you go on both sides of the river that aren't as prosperous. Do people have to come here for the messages, or are there any ways that you have outreach for some areas that may be more difficult for them to come up to this part of town to be able to get these sessions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have some community gardens that we have a community garden director and manager that take care of those, but I try to do a program with them where I teach a health and wellness segment, and we usually get some really awesome community members there. I also have some teaching kitchen apprentices that I have go out to the community garden, so they help Joshua, our community garden manager, with daily operations pretty much every other Monday, but then they also get to interact with the community members and help figure out where their questions are with, you know, how do I use this cabbage? We have so many carrots. What do I do with it? So we're really trying to be out in the community more. It's just been a process with having such a small staff.
You know, many people talk about food as medicine. Does that get into what you talk about in your classes too?
Yeah. So the concept of food as medicine for us, we are part of something larger called the Teaching Kitchen Collaborative, or TKC. And we are a shared member with UC's Integrative Center for Health and Wellness.
UC being University of Cincinnati.
University of Cincinnati, correct. So we do some community wellness series where either a doctor or even an RD will come out and they'll do a lecture for an hour on gut health or you know, even the healing benefits of herbs and spices. We haven't done that one in a while, but that was a really fun class. So they talk about the research behind it, and then we get in the kitchen and actually talk about and cook with things that they've been talking about in the research. How do you actually apply that to your life? So how do you actually use flax seeds in an appropriate way so that you digest them properly? So those are really interesting classes that help illuminate that whole process for people. But typically within our regular classes that don't involve UC, we still try to talk about nutrient density, but not make it a clinical thing for them.
So in your mind, when you look at the people that you've been talking to, what feels like the most important area to emphasize? Is there, when you're looking at people that are coming to this, to this program, what's your goal?
My primary goal is to help people critically analyze where their food comes from, and also make them feel comfortable in a kitchen to use local and seasonal ingredients in a positive way that's not wasteful, and really become stewards for themselves and their community and even the land. So that's really what I try to do.
Do they come in with questions on some of the issues like antibiotics, you know, what's antibiotic free or not, or how should they feel about GMOs, or some of these other issues? Do they bring those to the classes for you?
Sometimes. It really depends on the people. Sometimes we get really interesting questions that are very in-depth about even though we don't use fish very often because we don't have a lot of fish in the area, people usually ask, what's the most sustainable thing? How do I know that I can trust where my spices come from? There's a lot of questions that come up that are really fascinating, and hopefully we help illuminate the whole process for people and get them to do their own research as well, because we can only do so much in our time.
Do you ever think that you could actually walk out and say, hey, here's the crop that we're going to be growing?
Yeah.
Or maybe even hear the lambs that, you know, this is what the sheep look like. You've got some funny looking sheep here, too.
We do have some funny looking sheep.
I've seen sheep when I was coming in. There's like black and horns, and I think this is not your typical sheep flock.
Right. Yeah, so we do some classes where we can bring out participants and students to either harvest or at least see the fields. We actually did a really lovely community-based class with another company called Fab Ferments, where we went out and harvested a bunch of different veggies and then came back in and fermented them together to essentially make a field kraut of sorts. So we try to do that. We can't do it in every single two-hour segment, but sometimes we'll also bring some of our farmers into classes, and we'll talk about how it got to the kitchen and then what to do with it once it's in the kitchen. So we've been planning a lot of classes for 2020 that really incorporate that. So we have one with our livestock manager, Danny, where we'll talk about how we raise our chickens, and then we'll do a roast chicken dinner. So wow. It's a fun thing.
So from your perspective, what do you get excited about in the future? I mean, you're going down a path right now, and you're doing these kind of programs. And what do you think that needs to be happening, or you get excited about happening that's ahead in these next 4 or 5 years?
For us, I have many different plans. I'm sort of a planner. I think most chefs are, to begin with. But some of my strategic goals for us are to hopefully get online classes. So even though people may not be able to get to the farm itself, we can still provide that content for people, no matter if they're in Ohio or somewhere else in the world, to help them feel better about what foods that they are purchasing or cooking with, but also help them think about it a little bit more and connect themselves to the land. So that is one of my primary goals for the next 4 to 5 years, is to really create an online basis as well. But we're really trying to work on expanding our staffing as well, so that I can do more things in the community, or we can build more community programs. So there's a lot in the works, potentially a cookbook at some point, which would also be another way for people to really learn what's going on here. So
Are you finding other people doing the same thing you're doing around the country? I mean, with a connection this close to a farm and this outreach on how to prepare, how they can be consuming the products like that.
I think we're certainly in a very unique situation, and I know that there are many other people interested in illuminating the process, but from a physical standpoint, there are very few other farms/teaching kitchens that are combining the way that we are doing. But Stone Barn certainly does a fabulous job. There's other farms that are really invested and committed to helping people understand their food more, and certainly the chefs too. So I wouldn't say there's something exactly like we're doing here, but there are certainly people who care and are trying to push the message forward.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that I think that people are getting food from several different places. Mm-hmm. But I notice here in the Cincinnati area, too, you can go to the large supermarkets, and they're identifying local farms, too. Mm-hmm. So people are able to purchase and maybe follow up with more, you know, preparing foods like you're suggesting, and still see the story of where the farms are, you know, the farms that are producing for them.
Right. And I think people are getting more interested in understanding who's growing their food and what's the story behind how it got to them. You know, we live in a globalized society, which has its positives and its negatives, but it's great to see that people who aren't just in the food system, well, we're all in the food system, but those who aren't making a career out of it are still interested. So I'm very happy to see that that is happening.
So how do you pick out your food?
How do I pick out my food? I am very, if we're just talking about cooking, I'm very mood dependent, but I typically, for when it comes to cooking for classes and events, I try to think about what's in our market. Sometimes I just walk over there, or I look back on things that we've made in the past and how can I reinvent that and make it even more exciting for our clients and other people, and also myself. Otherwise, I look at our Local Food Connection ordering sheet and I see what I can order, and then I make things out of that. So it's a little different than thinking of, I want to make this dish. What ingredients do I need? I try to think.
Well, you're a chef. You're a chef, and you work at a farm, and your office is a big barn. And so you can pick out almost anything. So what's your favorite dish for yourself? You're going to say, I'm going to make this, and this makes me happy.
You know, very mood dependent when it comes to cooking. So that is a great question. What am I feeling right now is usually what I have to ask myself. We have actually been making a lot of sweet potato gnocchi lately because we have some beautiful sweet potatoes on the farm, and we have this Japanese varietal that's purple. So I would say that I'd probably do a sweet potato gnocchi with some sage right now.
Oh, give me a quick run through. How do you do that?
So first thing you need to do is roast the sweet potatoes just to make sure that they're tender. That you actually do need to peel the skin afterwards and puree it. We usually use a food processor, but you could mash it with a fork. From there, if you're going to use an egg, you would crack an egg into it. Usually we add a little bit of ground ginger and some salts, mix that together, and then you incorporate usually all-purpose flour, and we're able to get local flour from Kentucky, which is super fascinating.
Wait a minute. Local flour from
Kentucky? Local flour, yeah. I think people always forget that grains are something that you can buy locally as well. It's certainly not the trendiest thing or the thing that people think about the most, but it's something to really consider when we eat a lot of grains in our diet, and there can be local flour.
So yeah. It's wheat.
So it's wheat, yeah.
And there's a mill that's able to produce that.
Yeah, it's in Midway, Kentucky. I believe it's Weisenberg. I cannot pronounce it correctly, but they are they're great. They're awesome people.
So, and then at I might have interrupted you.
Oh,
I don't know if
fine.
You were done with the gnocchi.
Basically,
I'm not done with
gnocchi.
The gnocchi yet. I wish that we were able to do samples, too. You know, there's some really good beverages around here, too. There's hard ciders, and there's I just heard that Cincinnati has is like rated like number one in the country on beer.
Yeah, we're a big city for
fabulous
beer.
Beers, and word has it that across the river they know how to grow some make some whiskey too.
A little bit.
So, do you pair any of these local beverages with these foods?
I do. A little tidbit about myself: I'm actually certified Cicerone, so it's a big part of my life to pair beer with foods. My dissertation was on craft beer culture in Philadelphia, so I kind of geek out with beer. So we do not tons of beer pairings, but we've worked with Fibonacci, which is a local brewery that tries to use local ingredients in their beers.
How do you spell that?
Fibonacci. You know, I'm a terrible speller.
Okay, well, Fibonacci.
So, yeah, it's spelled exactly like Fibonacci. They are in Mount Healthy. They're awesome people, and they really care about experimenting with local ingredients. And they're just amazing people that really care about their community. So we try to do some activities with them and classes, but I also try to work with beers, not just from them, but other breweries in the area to pair with.
So. Well, you know, you made me think about the beers when you were starting to talk about how they grow grains around here, because the thing I'm finding out is that these brew pubs and all these different breweries are becoming really, really curious about grains.
Right.
And oftentimes the people that seem to be making the beer, they aren't coming from a farming background. Mm-hmm. But, man, they are really diving in and learning about all the different grains and how it changes the flavor of the beers.
Yeah, and it's grains are really fascinating because they're little parcels of energy, and you can do so many different things with it, especially if you're interested in fermentation. And I think the more brewers that get into understanding where their grains are coming from, but also how to experiment with it, because local grains are not necessarily the same thing as getting it from a maltster that homogenizes things together or has a very specific way to do it for every single grain, rather than recognizing that local grains are different and they have their own terroir and they have their own livelihood to them. So it'll be really interesting to see how brewers switch that up in the future.
Well, as we talk in this barn and wrap up, I'm still looking out and seeing snow on the ground at this particular time. So if I were going to go have a beer with my lunch, I wish it were a little warmer or heartier. Do you have any advice on selecting beers to go with these meals on cold days?
On cold days, it truly depends on what actual meal you're having. But a lot of Belgian beers tend to be bigger, or Belgian style, I should say. It doesn't have to come from Belgium. Otherwise, let's see. But I mean, barley wine is a really big beer. So if you really wanted a winter warmer, if you didn't want to, you know, schnapps, you could get away with a barley wine. But we do have some really awesome other, Kate is telling me to say porter, which is very true.
Porter.
Porters are always fabulous. Pretty much anything with a big malt build would be warming. Like
I had an oatmeal stout at 50 West just yesterday.
There you go. Yeah.
with a stew of some sort.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a great combination. Yeah, anything that's kind of big and burly is a great thing to have during the winter. But you can get away with things that are sours as well, because sometimes that cuts through. Like if you're having a stew, it'll cut through the heartiness of it, so you can enjoy more. So there's different ways to look at the beer and food combination.
Well, that's some of the fun stuff you get to do, too. So I tell you, it's great talking to you. This is a whole interesting concept that we mm-hmm. close the loop here, because we talk to people about knowing how their food is grown. Mm-hmm. But then if you could say, okay, well, if we're buying food, that we know more of the story of the food production, what do we do with it? And you're a chef that's working for a farm and it's helping do that story. I really appreciate that. If people want to know more about mm-hmm. Turner Farms, where do they find you?
They can find us on our website. It's www.turnerfarm, so TurnerFarm.org.
Well, thank you. I've been talking to Stephanie White, the chef at Turner Farms. Thanks for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Oh, it's a pleasure. This was super fun.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.